I'm not sure, is the microphone working now?
Yes.
It does. So I think 25 years ago, this would have been a sensation if somebody can relate toda brackets from homotopy theory to modular forms from arithmetic or complex analysis. But I think nowadays everybody knows how this works. The keyword is elliptic cohomology or topological modular forms, or how you call it. But how does that work precisely? Which toda brackets can we compute, and which modular forms do play a role here? So this talk is about how this works in practice. I'm going to use the blackboard only because I want you to put some confidence into this talk. It's a talk about formulas, of course, but they are not too incomprehensible. In fact, they're quite pretty small. It's just a small calculation that I want to share with you. So let me start with toda brackets. I'm going to remind you of toda brackets. I think this is nowadays more necessary than reminding you of what a modular form is, right? Even at a homotopy theory meeting. So we start like in ancient years with a map of real spaces, or maybe spectra, x, y, z, and we have, say, an alpha and a beta and a gamma. If we suppose that the composite is going to be null homotopic, like this, so beta composed with alpha is null homotopic and gamma composed with beta, then we can write down a map here, which is called the toda bracket. I think it's written in that, like this, gamma beta alpha. This is a map from suspension of W into V. How does that work? Well, you choose a null homotopy here, say some X and some null homotopy here, G, and then you notice that the map F here really gives you a map from the cone of W into Y, which can be composed with gamma. So this is the cone here, cone over W, and you can, an F, you can think of a map of cone, which you then compose with gamma. And G also gives you a map from the cone of X into V, which we can precompose with alpha, cone over alpha, G. So we have two copies, a C plus maybe and a C minus of W. Then you notice on the bottom and here on the top, we have the same map. We can put these together. It's a map, just a composite of the three. It's just alpha, beta, gamma, right? So that's the map here. But we had to choose here null homotopies, F and G. So this map is not even up to homotopy well defined. It's only well defined up to these choices here. It's well defined up to, let's see, if you have two null homotopies, this gives a map of the suspension of W into Y. Here's the suspension of W into Y, which again we can compose with gamma. And two null homotopies G would give you a map from the suspension of X into Z, which we can precompose with the suspension of alpha. And that's the indeterminacy of the toda bracket. That's one way to define toda brackets. There's another way to look at toda brackets in terms of manifolds. Say we really have here, for example, maps between spheres. That's the case we are looking at. So case of spheres, I should say. A stable map between spheres we can picture by a framed manifold, and that's what we want to do. So we have, say, A, B, C framed manifolds. And suppose that the product A times B is a boundary of some U, and B times C is also a boundary of some V. Then we can form a manifold by closed manifold by taking U times C and V times A, and king the two together over a times b times c. That's a total bracket in terms of manifolds, a, b, c. Now it's common to organize, I should write below, right? To organize these data in a diagram like this. So here we have A, B, C, and below we have U and V, and you get a total bracket by taking the product of V, A, and U, C. Such a thing is called a defining system of a total bracket. So now you can imagine there are even higher total brackets. Say we even have a D here, another manifold, and we again have this null bodism V, and also here null bodism between C and D, W. And I suppose maybe that one is a boundary again of some X. So I can put X here and the same here, some Y. Then we can form another closed manifold by taking X times D, Y times A, and U times V. And that's called the product bracket A, B, C, D. You can even go higher than that. So these are total brackets. Now, what does it mean to compute total brackets? Well, it means you feed your total brackets with something that you know, which has a name, and you want to know the outcome. You want to know the name of the outcome. Well, there are several ways to give names to elements in the stable stems and the stable homotopy groups of the spheres. And I want to use the Adams-Novikov spectral sequence. So, maybe I can just write this here. The Adams-Novikov, let me remind you of that. Going to start with, classical one would be MU, but I'm going to start with some theory E, and I want it to be later to be complex oriented. And I want it to be just a complex and flash ring theory. And I'm writing E bar for the fiber of the unit map. Let me have a filtration, let's say FS, of the homotopy groups of the spheres, here's pi star of the sphere, by taking the image, you take E bar, you smash it with itself S times, and it maps, each copy maps into S zeros, we have a map here from pi star E into that, and you have a filtration, oh that's the image, sorry, I mean the image. Image of that map, you get a filtration, that's the Adams-Novikov filtration, and it comes with a spectral sequence, and the differentials, as you know, they raise filtration by S, so if you, this would be a V2, I guess. VR raises filtration by R. So it comes to you, this gives you edge homomorphism. It's called an ES. Start with the S filtration, you can divide it out, S plus 1 filtration. This at least lies in the infinity term. And since there are no differentials higher than, if you are in filtration, this is the filtration here, S. See, you are here, then there would be no D3 hitting it, so that lies in E as S plus 1. Right. These are the names now of the elements. Let me give you some examples. Let's look at E0, for example. We start from pi 0 of the sphere, which is a zero filtration. Then we can go E0, that's a map to E10 of pi 0 of E. It's just the degree, if you like, of the E. Horevitz map, the degree of the map for your theory E. Let's look at E1, that's more interesting. Well, if you have an element in pi car of S of positive dimension, then life then positive filtration. So this is F1. We can go E1, which is a map into E2, 1, which you can identify with the X term. Now, Adams was studying this map for E complex K theory, or the real K theory, what we want to look at, complex K theory. And he wrote down a map into Q mod Z, an injective map, and called the composite here the E invariant. Now, how is this inclusion here constructed? Well, this comes from the resolution of E star, so of K star, but I'm writing E star here, where you just first you rationalize, that's an injective map, and then you just divide it out. E star tends to Q mod Z. You look at the long exact sequence for the X term and see that E star, so the X1 term for E star is the X0 term where you tensor the Q mod Z, and then you have that inclusion there. So let's go one step further. What about E2? Well, E2, if you have an element in the homotopy groups of the spheres where K is even and positive, then it lies in the second filtration, so we can take the, I should write it maybe here, sorry, take the map E2, and then you are in E3, 2, but since there are no differentials coming from the zero line hitting anything, this is also lying in the E2 term, which is again is X2. You can go even further if you like. If you take pi chi of S, say divided by the image of J, and K is odd, then this lies in third filtration. And by the same argument as before, we have that inclusion. We have that map here into X3. All right, so Adams looked at his E invariant, and he also studied Toda brackets, and he found the following out. So the result of Adams is, I think this is in his famous paper on J of X4, that when you take the E invariant of a Toda bracket, alpha, maybe we take a look at an easy case where in the middle you have n times the identity n is some number. So this is an element in filtration 0, alpha is in filtration 1, then you also have a beta. He basically has shown that the E invariant is multiplicative. This is just a multiplication, right? A Toda bracket. And the E invariant takes it to a usual multiplication. The E invariant of alpha times n times the E invariant of beta. He also studied more complicated. Is it possible to exchange these ones? I mean, that's not a good idea. Change them. He also looked at the case where in the first spot we have n times the identity, and then we have an alpha and a beta here. And in this case, it's also almost multiplicative, so it's n times E of alpha and E of beta. I should say this is mod Z. This is a little bit more complicated. But there's another factor coming in, which he calls delta. So but this delta is an explicit number that he writes down for every dimension. It only depends on dimension, only depending on dimensions. So even in the second case, it's up to this factor, it's quite fricative. And if you have n times zero down the back, you have the same formula. There might be a sign here, I'm not sure. I'm not the guy who's just a sign. And I think there was a sign. Yeah. So let me just briefly give an example. We, for example, want to compute things like mu. So the Hopf map of dimension 3, that has order 24, mu. Solar bracket is defined. And we want to know the eigenvan of that. So we use the formula. That would be the first formula, which I actually wrote down. So the eigenvan of mu is 1 over 12, the complex eigenvan. And then we have 24, 1 over 12, and 1 over 6. We are in dimension 7. There's another class in dimension 7. It's the Hopf map of dimension 7. That has the E invariant 1 over 240. So from that, we can conclude now that mu, 24 nu, is 40 times sigma. So that's what I meant with compute polar facts. Yeah, here you have to put in something that has a name and you get out something that has a name. So the purpose of this talk is now to generalize these formulas for the invariant E2, which used to be here somewhere. There it is. Is that multiplicative in a certain sense? And you want to use modular forms to do that. All right, Adams in his work, he proved this result by looking at exact sequences and splittings of exact sequences, and he looks at what the Adams operations are doing there, and he also used Matchett products defined in terms of Yoneda products, so in terms of exact sequences. Now that's getting really complicated, especially if you want to go to the two line. Nowadays, one I think rather would use the COBA complex. The COBA complex, if you like, that's just the let me write omega star for it. That's just the E1 term as I set it up. E1 term of the spectral sequence. This is not only a complex, it's a differential graded algebra. And so it comes to you with Matchett products. Matchett products are defined in the same way as Toda brackets, but instead of taking the boundary of a manifold, you take the differential of an element in the differential graded algebra, and instead of taking the product of manifolds, you take the product in the differential graded algebra. So defined in the same way. In the 70s, many people, Adams, as I said, he also looked at Matchett products and he saw that Toda brackets are related to Matchett products. And many people after him studied that, like Moss and Lawrence and May and Kochman. And what they found out, I think you can put it into following phrasing. It says, what they found out is if you want to compute a Toda bracket, can be longer, alpha 1. Alpha n, you are interested in the E invariant, ES, then it's related to the Toda, to the Matchett product of the E invariant. So let's say alpha 1 has situation S1, so we have defined ES1 of alpha 1, and suppose this Matchett product is defined. Maybe even strictly defined here. Then suppose you can write down the Matchett product like this, then they show there's an inclusion that way. For S equals, you take the sum over the SIs minus n plus 2. Let's see if that works for that case here. There are two classes of situation 1, one of situation 0. The sum is 2 minus 3 plus 2 is again 1. That's right. So the element in the end here, sigma, has the equation 1. So that works. And I should say this is only true if there are no crossing differentials. What is a crossing differential? It's what it says. Oh, here we still have the picture. A crossing differential would be a differential like this. That's a crossing differential. In the defining system, I should say. There are no crossing differentials in the defining system of your Messier product. All right, so total brackets and Messier products, they belong together somehow. The ES in there is multiplicative, that's what it says. If you take ES of that thing, then it's just a bracket of that, of the ES in the defining system. This is something which doesn't happen for our case, for the E2 invariant, which is good for us because there aren't really things coming from below. Right. Now let's look at Adam's construction again. He was really studying the E invariant. And we want to study the X2 term here, which is the X1 term. The X2 term, Mark told us about it already, as we know from Miller and Wilson in the 70s. This is not fitted at all. That has a lot of generators. These betas with three indices. It's not cyclic, even if you fix the dimension. So you cannot just map it into Q mod C. And K theory is not good enough to detect any of these beta elements, except of maybe products on one line. So we need something else. And I said it already in the beginning, we want to take T and F. So let's take E to be T and F. That's not complex-oriented, but we can make it complex-oriented by introducing a level structure, TMF1N. So the homotopy groups in dimension 2k of that guy, given by modular forms of degree k for the congruent subgroup gamma1N. I don't want to fix the big N, capital N. I should say, for gamma1N, and they are integral, meaning they have Q expansion in where you divide out by N, and you also have an nth root of unity. So somehow the system of all TMF1N, the system is as good as TMF itself. So there's a lot of, this is Langweber exactly, and a lot of things known about that. For example, the corporations, they are known. They also have a description. These are modular forms in two variables. So this is just usual classical modular forms. This would be, I think, two variables, sometimes it's called a Hilbert modular form of total degree here. So meaning what you have here is a sum of modular forms. You can run like this. In one variable, tensor together, where I plus J equals K, so the total degree is K, and the whole sum should Q expand integrally. Now you have a Q left and a Q right expansion. You have two variables. So I could write here a Q left and Q right expansion. It's integral. So that's more known about it. For example, it's known K theory. Is that a question? Not yet, maybe later. Pi to K. Well, it's concentrated in even degrees. I could just put a zero here. This is also concentrated in even degrees. K slash E. This is what people call CATS modular forms. Or the ring of divided congruences, sometimes written with a capital D. So what you have here is you take sum of modular forms, inhomogeneous. Fi is a modular form of weight I, and you sum them up. It's an inhomogeneous modular form, doesn't have any weight. And you want that the whole sum, once you Q expanded, is integral. You don't want that the individual summons are integral modular forms. They are just complex or relational modular forms. But in the end, the result, the sum, that should be integral. So now what we have to do, oh, I just erased it, didn't I? U-band is gone. We want to write down the resolution now of E star. E is now the abbreviation of TNF1. So we do it like atoms. We start with E star and then we rationalize the thing. We divide it out. And then we have to go on because we're looking at X2. We take the map into, well, we have the map from the sphere into K-theory, and that's the map in E homology, and the Q mod. This is an injective map because of the Q expansions. Remember, these are modular forms, these are CATS modular forms, and both of them are determined by the Q expansion. So that map is injective. And then you divide it out again. You take E star K-bar, expansion K-bar, and your Q mod. So now we have two differentials. There's a delta here, and then there's a delta here. Then you look at the x terms, and there's a proposition which tells you the following. The x term, we have to map delta square now, coming from the primitive, from x0, of that guy. That's a map here from the primitives. I'm not just writing P here, the primitive of what I have there, E star suspension K, then the Q mod Z. That map is ejected, and the kernel is given by pi star suspension K bar, then the Q mod Z. These are just the constants. So this is almost the same. So you can describe elements in the two line by the ring of divided this is a bar here, sorry. The ring of divided congruences divided out by what you have in dimension a classical modular form. I'm going to write that down in a minute. Thing in the middle here, that thing, that's just the ring of divided congruences divided by classical modular forms of that certain degree star we are looking at over Q mod Z. One can do, I should say, maybe a little bit better one if one replaces, yeah. The primitives, I mean just the parentheses, what you have in the middle right now. So that thing here, they didn't go away. That's it. The primitives of that thing. Well, yeah, so I should say maybe a little bit about that. So if you can do a little bit better if you work with the K-local sphere here, then you have their modular forms of that certain degree. Ordinary modular forms, and that is connected to new forms, and they are all invariant under the operation of the Hecker algebra. They're all eigenfunctions here because we look at primitives. And I had a discussion with Nico Naumann yesterday, and I haven't made it precise. It's just a nice picture. The one line is given by classical modular forms invariant under the action of the Hecker algebra. These are just the Eisenstein series, and the 2 line is given by new forms. So these are the non-classical, if you divide the classical out, the non-classical modular forms in there and under Hecker algebra. I have to make that more precise, but that's what it is. I also owe to Nico Naumann an inclusion here, the Naumann inclusion, into a bunch of Q mod Z's. And we can even put in here a finite sum. This is an explicit, and that explicit map is a combination of Fourier coefficients that we can write on every dimension. With that combination of Fourier coefficients is well defined on the quotient. Fourier coefficients. And you even know how far to go. You can check an element here by using this inclusion, by calculating some numbers. Now it's clear what we are up to. We are now composing our invariant E2. Remember, that was a map from the even homotopy groups into X2. And then we use that description here to get to D mod N M star. That's the star coming from here over Q mod Z. If I don't use their modular forms, I also have to divide up the constants. So let's do that. That's M0 plus M star over Q mod Z, and I called that the F invariant. That's not how I defined it 15 years ago, the F invariant. It's the same, but it's how I could have defined it. It's good. I want to make some remarks on that. So here are some notes. I want to mention, of course, Max Behrendt's work, as you have heard. Max Behrendt also has a description of the 2 line. It's a different. There's no D. You're right. Okay. So Mark described the beta in terms of what P modular forms, and in the common paper with him, we have a direct translation and a formula which translates his work into this ring D mod M star related to the F and M. I also want to mention 2 other works. One is of my student Hanno von Bodecker, and you see it is seated. The following, he describes the F invariant in terms of spectral invariants on manifolds with corners. So an element in the 2 line, in the Adams-Novikov MU 2 line, you can picture by a manifold with corner. I should say, if you have a framed manifold, it's in the second situation. If there is a manifold with corner, having that manifold as corner and having a stable splitting, and it comes with a stable splitting of the tangent bundle in two unitary sub-bundles, stable sub-bundles. And he was looking at the case where you have a vibration. See, this thing is a manifold with corner. This thing is a manifold with boundary, and that is a manifold with boundary. So this is like a product that gives you some corners here. I should say the M is the corner. This is a framed manifold. It's the corner of X. I think this is maybe the general case. I think you can picture every element in the second line by a vibration like this. he has many examples, and he wrote down the F invariant in terms of a spectral invariant, like you have for the E invariant. You take the eta invariant, S for the E invariant. So you look at the Dirac operator on each of the boundary of the fibers. You compute the eta invariant. Now this is a bundle, it's not just one manifold. You have it for every element in B. And there's a way by Bismuth and Shiger, they assemble these eta invariants into a differential form. You also have to take care of the connection, so we have to add some Chern-Sein glass and then multiply that with the elliptic series that you have from the elliptic genus in your connection on B. That's his formula. And we compute a lot of examples here in the harmonic degree of spheres using that, just that formula. Right now he's working on compactifications, Borel-Serre compactification of non-compact Lie groups, and compute with the F invariant some examples. There's another nice formula due to Bunke, Ulrich Bunke and Naumann, which appeared in Manuscripto recently. They showed that the F invariant of M is itself an eta invariant. So suppose M is the boundary of some manifold V, then this thing is itself an eta invariant. You have to take the usual Dirac operator and you twist it with the power series that you have as in the elliptic genus. Okay, that's the elliptic Dirac operator. Then they have the notion of the E and eta invariant there, and that's the F invariant up to the Chern-Simon glass, where you take care of the connection. Actually, these formulas there, they forced me to look at the F invariant again. I want to contribute something again for the F invariant. And I'm contributing now the formulas for the Toda bracket. So the formulas look like this. Here's the first theorem. It says, suppose we have the class alpha and the E invariant of alpha is 0. So that means already that the F invariant is defined, right? And we choose the representative of alpha such that N times alpha is integral. It's an integral Katz modular form. Then the F invariant of a Toda bracket, where you have alpha in the front, and say N times iota in the middle, and a beta in the back, is as good as it can be. It's the F invariant of alpha times N times the E invariant of beta. In other words, that the F invariant is multiplicative. It takes a Toda bracket and turns it into a usual product. But one has to be a little bit careful by choosing the right representative here for the F invariant. Let me give you an example. So what shall I take? Sigma squared to eta. You want to compute the F invariant of that. Capital N should be 3 then. So we take gamma 1, 3 modular forms to compute this Toda bracket. It's of dimension, let's see, 8, 9, 10, dimension 10. It's a class in dimension 10. So we first need to know the F invariant of sigma squared. The F invariant for the usual product is certainly multiplicative. That's just the E invariant of sigma times the E1 invariant of sigma. So to make that concrete, the invariant of sigma was 1 over 240, and the E1 invariant of sigma is the divided Eisenstein series, E4 over 240. I should write E4 somewhere. now I waste the hormone. I forgot to mention so many things. I wanted to mention at that point the result of Bunker-Naumann is especially nice because you don't need the manifold with corners at all. You see that? For the computation, there's a Z. You don't need that. You just need a manifold with boundaries. And for that computation, we need the manifolds with corners. This is good for actually doing computation. That is really hard to compute. I haven't seen an example, but it says that you only need the manifolds with boundaries. But I want to finish that problem right here. F of sigma squared is that. Okay, E4 is 1 minus 240, and then you take the sum. It's the Q expansion here of the fourth Eisenstein series. You take the sum over all divisors of n, the cube, and then Q to the n. So as you can see from this formula, this doesn't have the property that 2 times the f invariant is integral. But as I said before, the f invariant is not well defined. You still have that bar here. That means you have to divide off by usual modular forms of that degree 8, in this case, and the constants. And you can rewrite that by just taking E4 minus 1 over 240. That's something which is integral. You square that and take 1 over 2 in the front. That's the same f invariant because they have the same middle term. The middle term is just this, and the highest term is something of degree 8, the Lowther constant. So that has a good property that 2 times it is integral. So from this, we immediately see that the f invariant, we can now compute, of sigma squared 2 eta is... Well, it is just this here, right? F2, the invariant of eta is 1/2, that cancels, and so we get minus 1/2 E4 minus 1 over 240 squared. Now, there's a whole list of formulas. I know this from Bodecker, Hans von Bodecker. Here's some paper from the archive. He computed the whole beta family. There's another paper by Hornbost and Naumann. But if you want to do it with the usual Eisenstein series, you can use the simpler formula of von Bodecker. He showed that was beta 4-3. He computed the whole beta family. He has formulas for that. It's actually easy. The formulas are easy, not the computation, maybe. The formulas are always looking like this, with different powers. Maybe a second term, again looking like this, with a different power. So what we conclude now, beta 4-3, isoprime 2, is the same as this Toda packet. That's good. So we can compute some Toda packets. Now, this was the easiest example. Remember in Adam's work, yeah, I worked on 2 formulas, one with something of degree 0 in the middle and something of degree 0 on the front. And that was the easier formula. And it's the same for the F invariant. It's getting harder if you look at higher Toda packets, of course, and if you have something of positive degree, positive situation in the middle. But yeah, I'm going to state that now. I need a definition first, in order to state it. I want to introduce a bracket for modular forms. Suppose you have a divided congruence, sum over Fi, and then I want to deduce a bracket with some index here. This should be the set of all modular forms F of degree K over Q mod Z, is the property that has the same Q expansion as the given one. So the QIs, the I's Fourier coefficient of the sum over of the given divided congruence is the same as QI of F for I positive, for all I positive. I should say, What is the indeterminacy of the bracket? Well, if you have two elements in here, two modular forms of weight k, they can only differ by something which has an integral q expansion except of the zero term, and that was computed by Serre. It's just the Eisenstein series. So this is a coset of, I reformulated as cycles in the Kolbe complex. I mentioned zero k. Let me give you an example. I want to compute, say, a bracket like this. Here's an example. If you have any number, b, and you cube it, and it's the same or it's congruent to b to the 5 mod 8. That means that if you also sum over these, b cube, b divides n, q to the n, is congruent to sum over b to the 5, q to the n. And you also sum over n here. Now that's e4 minus 1 over 240. This is e1 minus e6 over 504. And that the equation is mod 8. And that means, for example, that if you look at the divided congruences, e4 over 240, dimension 6, so that bracket here over 1 over 8, it's non-integral. But what you get out is then 1 over 8, 1 minus 6 over 504. All right, now I can write down the theorem. Theorem 2 says the F invariant of a bracket like this, you take n times the order in the front, like in the second formula of Adam's alpha beta. Now, don't do that. That's the formula I don't want to write down. There's also a formula for it. I want to write down a different case. Alpha, say, is a class of dimension 2k minus 1, beta is a class of 2l minus 1, and gamma is a class. We have two, we have three odd classes, say, k, l, n. And then we compute the total bracket, alpha, beta, gamma. I want a formula for that. So it says it's almost multiplicative. You have to use the bracket, though. You take the E1 invariant of alpha times the E invariant of beta, and then you compute this bracket here in dimension k plus l, and you multiply it by the E invariant of gamma. This is what it is supposed to be, but it's not. Sometimes you have a correction term, unfortunately. You also have to compute the E1 invariant of beta times the E invariant of gamma, in dimension L plus N, take the zero coefficient of that, subtract E of beta times E of gamma. Just kidding. That's E of gamma in here. And then you multiply it by E of alpha. Sorry, that it's almost that. That's what I want to say, really. I couldn't get rid of this extra term. It didn't matter much in the calculations that I did. But I mean, I don't think that I have to make a long example. It's a longer calculation if you actually do that. You can do things like sigma, 2 sigma, mu, for example. And what's coming out, that's the F invariant of beta 4, 2, 2, so a class of order 4 in this case. And it uses, the calculation uses, I don't have a stick here, it uses this bracket that I just calculated. In fact, any calculation, once you have elements from the image of J, you always have to compute this bracket, and then it's the same argument all the time. You just take powers there and mod 8 or whatever, and then and you see it coming out. You see the result, the F impact. I want to make one example of a four-fold total bracket. Yes? So the calculation also, I have many formulas for you if you need one. As I said in the beginning, yes. But let me give one more example. Here's another theorem. Suppose we have a class alpha again, the invariant of alpha is 0, the invariant of beta is 0, and we choose a representative again that n times f of alpha is integral, and n times f of beta is integral. And suppose, well, then we have a total bracket alpha n times iota beta n times iota. So we have two classes of filtration 2 and two classes of filtration 0. Remember that formula. The whole thing will have filtration 2. I can write down f in the front, and the formula looks like this. It's a beautiful formula, that's why I write it down. So this is f of alpha times f of beta times n times m, of course, but you have to arrange it in the right way. You tensor f of alpha with f of beta. Now this thing here, that's a Katz modular form in two variables. And as I defined the bracket before in one variable, there's also a bracket in two variables. It's defined in the same way. I have to multiply it by n. It's defined in exactly the same way. And it's a coset over cycles again. That's a computation, and it's a coset over time. It's well defined, it's a coset over cycles in omega 1 over q mod c. I shouldn't say that, it's over q mod z. Q mod z of that certain degree that I'm writing down, it's the dimension of alpha plus beta. Yes, I shouldn't say that like this. So say alpha has degree 2k minus 2. Beta has degree 2L minus 2, so we have K plus L again. And then I have put it here, K plus L. So it's almost that, and you take the zero coefficient of your second term, and you multiply the whole thing by N. That's the formula. And I'm going to give an example now. I'm computing something explicit with that formula. I think that's the best way to understand formulas. I want to do the Cavalier class in dimension 30. So here's an example. We look at sigma square 2, sigma square 2. All right, do we have everything that we need? Actually, we already computed the F invariant of sigma squared. So we put in the formula, sigma square 2, sigma square 2. It's a class of dimension 30. So I have to write down now the bracket, the F invariant. We calculated as E4 minus 1 over 240 squared times 1/2, right, tensor. There's also factor 2 in the front. But now I get a 1/2, E4 minus 240 square, and we want to have a class, and I mention 8. Dimension E4 squared has dimension 8 plus 8, 16. All right, and why then we have to take Q0, right? You put the zero coefficient here. You look for the zero coefficient and multiply the whole thing by 2. So now we need to compute the bracket, this bracket for modular forms that I introduced for divided congruence. That is, we are looking for a modular form, a homogeneous modular form of weight 16, which has the same Q expansion, mod Z, like this guy, except of the zero terms. Now, a good candidate for this is E4 tensor 1 minus 1 tensor E4. See, that it subtracts the zero term, divided by 240, take that to the 4. It's not exactly the same, it doesn't have, but you need a factor in the form, 1 over 12. And then it actually has the same Q expansion as that guy. Middle terms are the same. So that's the bracket. Now we take Q0, right? That's a little exercise, that's interesting. We get 1 over 6. So we just put in now the zero coefficient, that's just the 1 here and the 1 there. So that's just E4 minus 1 over 240, 4. And by the formulas of von Bodiger, it's beta 8, 8 to the caviar class. And I mentioned that. I would be happy to have any candidate for dimension 62 to calculate, or 126 or something. If you have anything, I'm happy to calculate it. Thank you for listening. Great.